everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Sit Still, Look Opinionated. I'm your host, Claire Malky. That go-to table wine from Trader Joe's. Underrated. Whether we like it or not, we all know someone who is the living stereotype of a white lady. I know you know her. She hates spiders, long lines, and don't even mention needles. Yet somehow she chooses to watch endless YouTube videos of Dr. Pimple Popper. I truly love every single one of you listeners, like I really do. You're actively making my dreams come true. But this one is especially for you ladies who should really be using SPF 50. As your resident basic podcast host, I would be remiss if we didn't chat about the vaccine. Doesn't matter if you got Pfizer, Moderna, or even the controversial Johnson & Johnson. Their only way in is through getting stabbed in the arm. While we're on the subject, let's talk about that imagery. Getting stabbed in the arm. Really? So dramatic. These vaccine administrators aren't pulling out a switchblade. It's like everyone thinks they're either Mercutio, a scratch, or my name is Inigo Montoya, you vaccinated my father, prepare to die. In reality, the COVID vaccine is barely even a prick. And no, not the kind that will conjure up Maleficent and put the entire kingdom to sleep for 100 years. The vaccine prick will quite literally save lives. Now granted, the COVID shot may knock you out for 12 hours or so, but in my opinion, that's way better than snoozing through an entire century or actually getting COVID. But hey, I get it. Everyone has fears. It's a completely normal and human reaction. See, all of my fears are completely logical. Like the fear of walking alone at night. Or getting catcalled no matter how unsightly I look. Or my fear of the ghost that haunts my apartment every night at around 2:30 a.m. And right when I have to pee, I might add. Like I said, completely logical. As a community, we basic betches don't have a great rep. And for good reason. Seeing as we spend more time complaining about our overpriced brown sugar oat milk lattes than we do about the lack of affordable healthcare in America. Look, I know the thought of some metal getting pushed into your arm might sound scary, but I promise you, the reward outweighs the risk. Just take all that energy you would put into a call to the police because you saw a person of color minding their business, and instead drive your toned ass to a vaccination site. And think of it this way. After you get the Fauci ouchie and wait the recommended 2 weeks, you can hit the town with your girls, revisit that lovely wine bar, and pop open a celebratory bottle of Merlot, you basic bitch. We have got an excellent show in store for you all today. We have the amazing Amy Anderson from Huggable Riot in the studio. I so enjoyed this interview, and Huggable Riot is so near and dear to my heart. I can't wait to share it all with you. Since we're talking wine today, grab your favorite Trader Joe's 2-buck chuck and let's get started. Up next, this week's headlines. France is being blamed for the 1994 genocide in Rwanda. Impossible, the French responded. Rwanda is nowhere near the genocide region of France. Wine? The NYPD will be limiting the use of sound cannons on protesters. Trust me, that doesn't even work on interns, said Cuomo. The influential NYC Teachers Union endorsed Scott M. Stringer for mayor. Sounds like a real teacher's pet, fucking nerd. Conservatives are once again mad at LeBron James for his tweet protesting another murder by a police officer. In other news, conservatives are once again not mad at a police officer for murdering someone in broad daylight. Maybe conservatives need to wear those blue light filtering glasses. Burning Man organizers may require attendees to prove they've been vaccinated for COVID. And no, when you smoke DMT and the elves in the fifth dimension say you're immune, that doesn't count. I already asked. Businesses are having a tough time filling openings as society reopens.
But this D8...
Wait, how'd my writer slip that in there? Oh my gosh, I did it again! I did not consent to this joke, Gabe and Fee. With new trials underway, the CDC is looking forward to new versions of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. The publicly better version will be called the PB&J&J. Much more digestible. At the climate summit last week, Biden attempted to show and not tell the world that they can trust the U.S. again. Which basically sounds like he's just trying to get people to read his screenplay. A man was arrested after boasting on a dating app that he stormed the Capitol. Oh, honey, being 5'9 only looks good on you when you're not a domestic terrorist. Cirque du Soleil shows are set to reopen, and people are just flipping with joy. Trust me, I had to bend over backwards just to buy tickets. A man temporarily bought Google's domain name for $3 last week, meaning that for a brief moment, you could Richard things. God, what a dick. A woman in prison taught herself to read using the Twilight books. With that kind of determination, it's only safe to assume she can run for Congress once she gets through Harry Potter. But enough about Marjorie Taylor Greene's credentials. The most recent U.S. Census count showed a significant population loss in California. If my apartment was constantly on fire, yeah, I'd also move out. The EU will allow vaccinated American tourists to visit this summer. EU regulators made their determination by watching Fox News and saw that the undesirable tourists will have to stay home. Then the Italians proclaimed, "Then who's going to hold up the Leaning Tower of Pisa?" NASA's Ingenuity drone copter made a flight lasting the length of a football field. Also weird, scientists discovered a football field on Mars. To which the Martians replied, "We call it soccer here." Incriminating data shows ISIS facilities' mishandling of COVID was a major cause for outbreaks in the surrounding areas. We had mentioned the other stuff they're fucking up, but the show isn't that long. A scientist nun in Spain, who publicly opposes the coronavirus vaccine, is gaining popularity with conspiracy theorists. Which is fine because, those crazies need Jesus. The Oscars were last weekend, and I haven't seen that many white people taking credit for black people's stories since, well, the Oscars. And the only thing more awkward than Anthony Hopkins not being there was Joaquin Phoenix being there. Ambulance crews that service much of rural America have run out of money and volunteers. But thank God we still have our guns, said dead people. The CDC issued a guideline for safe summer camps. This year, it's going to take more than just condoms. Of Congress's $45.6 billion bill for emergency rental aid, almost none of it has reached residents. So, is my leaky faucet what they meant by trickle-down economics? To prove Trump won in Arizona, state Republicans hired an audit company called Cyber Ninjas. Which would be promising if they weren't a bunch of teenage boys playing Fortnite. And that was this week's headlines.
Imagine your grandma falling down, completely helpless.
I'm losing feeling in my leg. Young lady, please help.
Fear not, octogenarians of America. Find My Life Alert by Roomba is all you need.
Can't you find it or call 911?
Each Roomba we rescue from mob-run robot fighting rings is put through rigorous therapy and training.
I think my hip is broken.
Endorsed by PETA, Find My Life Alert gives emotionally broken and abused Roombas a new lease on battery life.
Oh God, I may be internally bleeding.
Keep grandparents safe from misplacing their life alert when their Find My Life Alert by Roomba arrives with free 2-day shipping.
But I need help now. Wait, free 2-day shipping?
Act now, and our universal mount for taxidermy pets is included at no extra cost. How's that sound, Graham? Grammy? Old people, always napping. Find My Life Alert by Roomba. Hey guys, I'm here with Gabe for our next segment, which he is going to lead off. Mostly because he said it was a surprise and wouldn't tell me what the segment is about. Gabe?
Thanks, Claire. I think you're gonna like this. Things have been getting pretty crazy in the world lately. One might say it's bananas. Here to talk more about the state of things is head of the Monkey Union, Mr. Bananas.
Oh, Gabe. Oh, no.
You kidding me? I haven't even said one word yet, and you're making jokes about my name?
Oh, come on. I'm sure you get it all the time.
No. I get it. I mean, it's just like, you know, look, everybody. Funny monkey with a funny name. Make the funny monkey do something funny, mommy. Fuck you!
Oh, my.
Let me ask you something. Did you have actual substantive questions for me, or did you just bring me on to make monkey jokes?
I had questions.
Really?
Yep.
Well, let's hear one.
Where are you from?
That's what you want to know.
Mm-hmm.
88th and Columbus. Next question.
What do you do for the labor union?
Oh. Well, okay. I mean, that's actually a very good question. I represent all primates across industries to facilitate better workplace environments and working conditions without fear of retaliation.
Mm-hmm. So you could say...
Gabe, I know what you're thinking, and just don't do it.
That you handle all monkey business.
Okay, yeah. You want puns? Well, I got a pun for you. I'm gonna go fucking ape shit on your ass! You want Mr. Bananas? Well, here's Mr. Fucking Bananas! And I'm about to go fucking bananas!
I'm sorry, I didn't know how else to phrase it.
Oh, you think I'm funny? I make you laugh? You think I'm a clown? Well, I'll certainly look like a clown after I slit your throat and start wearing your skin as a suit. I'm gonna track you down and rip your face off with my teeth. And then I'll claim it on my taxes because it counts as an occupational hazard under the union rules.
Oh, geez. This is getting violent.
Oh, you think this is getting violent? I haven't even begun to get violent yet. King Kong is gonna look fucking pedestrian compared to what I'm gonna do to you. You hear that, Gabe? I said King Kong ain't got nothing on me!
Isn't that from Training Day?
Oh, I'm gonna bury you, punk. I'm gonna bury you worse than Ryan Reynolds in that film where he gets buried alive.
Buried?
Don't help me remember the name of obscure movies when I'm in the middle of threatening your friend.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. I'm sorry. It's okay. Claire, you've actually been very respectful. I want to apologize for my behavior. I promise, I'm not usually like this. Truly. I mean, call around. Ask for Jerry. He's the orangutan who used to do the Tang commercials. I helped him out with a defamation case one time. We're very close. He'll tell you, I'm not usually like this.
Mr. Bananas, I forgive you.
No! You shut the fuck up! God, you make me so angry. I just see red.
I go blind with rage! I feel the need to just throw feces at taxpaying citizens. I can't stop myself. I'm breaking down. I'm going primal.
See? I wasn't so bad.
Gabe and Mr. Bananas, everyone. Gabe, can I see you in my office?
Hey, listener. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Sit Still, Look Opinionated. I know you were probably about to call your Aunt Lisa about how great this show is, but why don't you just send her a text instead? Hey, and while you're at it, just copy and paste that baby into a review on Apple Podcasts. Here, I'll even help you out. It could sound something like this. Sit Still, Look Opinionated is a hilarious show and is built by a team of hardworking comedians. Give the show a listen if you want a good laugh. It's definitely worth all 5 stars. If you've already written a review, consider joining us on Patreon. We've got a great crew, and we would love for you to join our opinionated family. Join our patrons, Anna, Jamie, Anthony, Laura, Andy, Christina, and Sam. To find out more, visit us at patreon.com/sitstill. Up next, my interview with Amy Anderson from Huggable Riot. All right, so for today's Chicago Artist Spotlight, we have the one and only Amy Anderson. She is a Chicago-based comedy writer and producer and also a good friend of mine. Amy, thank you for coming on the show.
Anything for you, baby.
Thank you. So to give our listeners a little bit of background, could you tell us about who you are and what you do a little bit?
Sure. I am a founder and owner of Huggable Riot. It was a Chicago-based comedy theater company. Over the previous 5 years, we've put on 25 different hour-long original reviews. In addition, we have a ton of one-offs, drinking game show and improv nights. We support other comedy groups opening, closing. Yeah, we have a lot of spinoffs and side things that our members do. I'm trying to think of shit.
Yeah. That sounds...
Yeah,
Huggable does a lot of great stuff and is definitely, it's a big movement here in the Chicago comedy scene. Can you talk a little bit about, like, your producing background and how Huggable Riot came to be?
Oh, yeah. So production is just sort of a thing. Our kind of ethos at Huggable Riot is let's do it right now. The idea is that you can continue to pay for classes and training and have other people show you how they would do it. But at some point, you just have to jump in and do it. So that's kind of what Huggable is. I've been through the writing program and paid through improv classes all the way through, like, probably 2.5 times. It was a lot. Originally I was trying to get into the director's program. I was like, I'll put up a show. And instead it was so much fun. I was like, I don't really know why I need to go see how somebody else does this. Let's figure out how I do it. And, so for my first show, I drafted Hunter to come help me because I have very little, stage training, like as far as stage picture and what it looks like to present a narrative on stage. My background's in comedy writing. I started doing stand-up in 2007 and improv maybe 2010, but it's a lot. I don't have a whole lot of technical theater knowledge, so I had him, basically begged him to come in and stage the show for me. And for the next one, he was like, okay, but I want to direct it. And I was like, cool, because I don't really know what that means anyway. And I just want to help the generation of material. It's a lot more interesting to me to take somebody's idea and help them get it on paper and put it on stage. So I kind of took over that part, and about the time we were going to do our third production, we were like, this has to be a thing. I was working a job that I very much so disliked and was not suited for. And I was like, if I'm going to jump back in and be a server again and not feel job security but have flexibility, then we have to commit. So we decided on a name. That day I went and bought the domain name and got all the handles on social media and stuff so we could start doing things like that. And for what it's been over the last 5 years is relied largely on our creative friends, is putting people that we know should be on stage, our creative friends in other ways. We use around 5 or 6 different graphic designers for posters and stuff and try to get their work out. I'm trying to think of Alyssa's name so I can name drop her. Ah, okay. It's been a long quarantine. Alyssa's last name is Shortridge. Alyssa Shortridge is our main graphic designer. Our logo was designed by Olin Kidd, so we bought and registered that. And it's just been kind of always focusing on the next show, whatever we're going to do next. We don't have like so much as a giant like 5-year plan. We're really just trying to get better at what we do and put good work on stage with people who deserve it.
I love that. And you've given so many opportunities to so many comedians, myself included. So it's Huggable Ride is a special place in my heart. I'm just realizing now I probably should have worn my Huggable sweatshirt for this interview. I have it in my closet right here. I'm just going to wait for this siren to go past. Great. So
we'll have to mail some of those.
We're
out on Monday.
Oh, nice. Amazing.
We get our logo shown, whatever.
Yes, love the logo. So where did the name Huggable Riot come from?
That's me and Hunter. We met as pretty fair to Midland, if not bad, servers at the Second City. So if anybody's not familiar with that, which why would you be? They do a rotation-based system based on your sales. And basically, if your sales aren't very good, you end up working Sunday matinee shifts. And so for probably the first 6 months I was at Second City, it was me and Hunter every Sunday matinee because our sales were not great. Which meant we spent a lot of time together and, you know, go out after work. And it was really common at the time for, like, the entire staff to go somewhere. But no matter where we went, Hunter and I ended up sitting at a bar chatting with each other, which we eventually started calling our gab sessions. and so he wanted something that had gab in it, and he, you know, pulled up his trusty dictionary.com and was just looking for things that he felt like suited us. So Huggable is actually for the gab and Huggable that Hunter picked it out. Mm-hmm. And I would like the idea of something that was cute with something that was tough. Like, we wanted something that was adorable and fun and welcoming, but had a bit of an edge and sort of wildness that we'd like for our comedy stuff to have. So yeah, the riot was me, Huggable was Hunter. And for some reason we both, once we decided on the name, we're like, oh, and the logo has to be a monkey. And I don't know where that came from. It was like, I was thinking a little creature guy, and he's like a monkey? Yeah, like a monkey. Great. I don't know why that happened, but it did.
Those are some of the best moments, though, when you're like, I can't exactly remember why or how, but it just works. And the logo is super recognizable. I mean, anytime I see it out and about, I'm like, oh, there's Huggable. Like, know it right off the bat.
Oh, yeah. I have a bad reputation for putting that logo on anything that will stand still long enough. Like, I got stickers and fanny packs and sweatshirts. I've looked into ordering socks recently. Like, I would put that logo on anything.
I would love a pair of Huggable socks. So if you ever do that, hit me up.
Okay.
So for the producing side and a lot of content generation, as you were mentioning, where does the inspiration for the shows come from? Does that come from you as the producer? Does that come from the director or the performers?
It varies a little bit. We always say that they will have the show that they write. So we try not to, for the most part, go to writers with a plan for the show in mind. We start a lot more out what is important to you. What do you want to write about? What is funny to you? We know, as a result, our shows are wildly different. We have some serious sartorial commentary, and we have shows that are almost entirely fart jokes. It just really depends on what that group of comedians, what the balance they strike together and what matters to them. And we always say what matters to you is what'll end up on stage. It's not even anything you have to push. Those are the scenes people write on. That's the stuff they keep bringing up as things that are important to them. There have been a few exceptions. A few years ago, we did an all-women's cast, so that kind of naturally lent itself to, like, what kind of women's issues can we talk about? And we've done at least one musical, so that relied on having some musical ability, and I think and that was written by Joe McDaniel, so he actually had that one already written. But we had a musical review that was written by the cast member, so it just kind of varies, and it also depends on who's directing and stuff. A lot of times the director wants to have more influence over creative content, but in general, I'd say it has a lot more to do with whatever that group of artists, what their vibe is together. I don't know if vibe's the appropriate word, but yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah, it's about, like, what is important to those people. And like you said, they're going to put up on stage what's important to them. Do you all have, like, a rotating group of members, or are there auditions? How does all of that work?
That also varies. That's the beauty of being in charge of something but making it up as you go along, is if a rule or plan no longer works for you, you just change it. So we originally had, like, a rotating cast of members, and we still do. We have a couple of general policies with that, like, once you've been in a Huggable show, you're in Huggable, and you're welcome to come back anytime. We have put up shows before because members came to us and were like, I have this show that I want to do. And we're like, okay, we'll do it. So we definitely have a production side. We've produced outside material for people that aren't in Huggable. But you can be in as many shows as you'd like, and for however long you want to do stuff with us, you can always come back. We've had members not do stuff with us for 3 or 4 years at this point and then come back and be in a show, which always makes me giddy because I love all of you so much. It hurts my little heart. But we have in recent years started holding auditions just to allow new people to come in. We're also very aware that while we like to think that we're open and diverse, we're a comedy theater company on the north side of Chicago, and it is our responsibility to be seeking out performers of color, LGBTQ performers. And so we've been trying to make a concerted effort to reach out to performers to join us rather than just sticking with the friends that we already have and making sure that we are representing people and artists that should be represented.
That's really important, especially in the comedy scene these days. Yep. And with everything happening. So pandemic 2020, how has this year affected Huggable Riot? And what is your opinion of how the Chicago comedy community will recover from this year?
Oh, such a big question. All right, here I go. Well, 2020 and the whole pandemic, we didn't know what was going to happen. You know, like, we thought 2 weeks, 2 months. And so I get very, and the band played on, kind of like, the ship is going down, but we will continue to work, because my thoughts were, we need to do this to have some sense of normality. So the city actually shut down the day, I believe, after our very first rehearsal for our show that was going up in June. That was supposed to go up in June 2020. We tried to, in May and June, put up a queer review, if possible, to go with Pride. And so it was actually being directed by a Huggable performer turned director, KJ Snyder. And they had assembled a great cast and were really excited to go. And then we didn't know what was happening. So our plan was, we're going to keep working on the show as though it's going up, because we don't know what else to do. And we figured out Zoom meetings and ways that people could read together online that would work. I mean, obviously it's not going to be what it was, but we're doing our best and put together, just keep going. Hunter and I kind of talked about it, and I believe KJ was on board. KJ, if you weren't, I'm very sorry, but my memory says you were. And we don't really have a huge interest of doing that show online. Online performance, improv, sketch, and stand-up has all been very difficult to do. I think there's some people doing it really well. Comedy Sports is doing it better than comedy theaters that have twice the amount of money and resources that they do. I've watched more comedy sports shows online than I think I ever saw in person. So I think they're doing a great job with it. But it's tough, and you saw me being unable to download Zencastr to do this podcast. I'm not really the person to help people with that. So we took the show as far as we could as ready. We have that show's actually in the can, ready to go for when the world opens up. I believe it would be sort of a rounding of the troops, seeing if everybody still wanted to perform it, was able to perform it, but it's basically sitting there. It can be on stage in as little as like 2 weeks if the theater's open tomorrow. So we worked on it until it got to the point where it was like, okay, now we're just kind of having them continue to work on the same stuff. And that is what started as like a supportive structure and link to the real world might make the work suffer, and it might become a hindrance. So we're gonna call it done. We put a deadline on it, and we're like, okay, whatever it was, like June 6th, this is gonna be done. We're gonna tie a ribbon on it and put it on the shelf for now. So it's still there. It's sitting there, and I love to have some wonderful performers in this cast who I won't remember all of them, so I won't list all of their names. But it's a really good, funny show, and I hope we get to put it up. As far as what's going to happen to comedy theater specifically, that's a gamble, right? Like, mm-hmm. Who knows? For me, so long, like, and a lot of what Huckle does is kind of directly ripped off Second City. Sorry. I paid for the glasses, so.
Mm-hmm.
but, you know, you get taught things, and so this is us using them. Their model, I don't know if that will be a functional business model for comedy theater going forward. Just because the Second City is a for-profit theater. It was under previous ownership. Right now, I don't know. But they operate on such a razor thin margin anyway, that when you have obstacles like, how do we do safe food and beverage? How do we have 300 people in a room together? I don't know what happens next. I do think, like I said, there are people that are doing online shows really well, but that is so difficult to maintain an audience for. You know, if you've paid for a ticket and gotten in a car and gone somewhere, I've got you for 2 hours, even if you only kind of like the show. If you're in your pajamas and you can change the channel or watch TV behind it whenever you're bored, like, people are going to log in so their friends saw them log in and then log off.
Mm-hmm.
There's one awkward scene. I'm just going to close this. This is uncomfortable, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't know how you maintain an audience for that, though I'm sure there are people much smarter than me working on that problem right now. And as far as presentation, you know, at a certain point, it's just going to be talking heads. So what do we do? I recently worked on the Second City staff show with Mark Fleming and Amanda Leo. And Mark Fleming basically taught himself how to use Zoom. And what was the other thing we did it on? Twitch.
Mm, yeah.
So organizing that all with the delay and other people's homes, and like we had pre-recorded segments, putting backgrounds up and trying to set a stage digitally. And he did a fantastic job. Somebody hire Mark Fleming.
Mm-hmm.
Anything. Might be the most capable man I know. So I think that it is possible, but I don't know what happens now. It's kind of scary and open-ended, but you know, innovation comes from necessity, right?
Yeah. So
this could be a completely different world, but comedy not only will come back, it didn't go anywhere. It was here the whole time. You know, you see all those memes on Facebook or whatever about when the times were tough, you relied on the artists, and that might be cheesy enough to be a meme now, but it's also unbelievably true.
Mm-hmm.
Just the content of stuff at home, you know, books, presentations online, whatever. Comedy didn't go anywhere, and it's more necessary than ever now. I think people have been watching each other put up shows since cavemen, and they're going to do it anyway. We're just going to figure out how it works now.
Mm-hmm. I love that sentiment that comedy didn't go anywhere. That's really special, because I've never really thought of it that way, but I've been, you know, I've been working on like this podcast project like for the last year, and I've known so many people who have been like, okay, it's time for me to start my podcast or build my YouTube channel or start a Twitch channel. And it's really inspiring to see people work with what they have. And I didn't realize, I always knew artists were resilient and resourceful, but it's been amazing to actually see people be like, okay, let me, if you're going to take away my stage, my microphone, let me figure out a new way.
Absolutely. I actually just got back in town because I was working on a movie set. My buddy Joey, that I've known my entire life, has a movie production company called The Monster Closet. And we just did their second feature, but that was part of it, is figuring out how we're going to film a movie with COVID restrictions, having a feature that, spoiler alert, all takes place in one apartment, essentially, with a cast of 4 people total. You know, I think with the cast and crew, it was 7 of us, and figuring out how we can make that work. It involves just spending a lot of your time sitting amongst lighting equipment. Just like, there's so much lighting equipment in the world. But yeah, it's their second feature. They have had success before. I think their last feature won the London Sci-Fi Film Festival.
That's amazing.
Yeah. They're weird. They're weird ideas that just get expounded upon. And essentially, the comedy base to get yes and is... somebody else in their group is like, you know, absolutely, that a severed arm falls from the sky. How do we make it happen? Or whatever it is they're doing. I'm trying really hard not to reveal anything about this movie.
I know. But I'm like intrigued to hear, to watch it someday. Like, that sounds so cool.
It's called, right now the title is Dickhead. I'm not sure if that's going to be the finished title, but it should be out around November, I think. They'll be done editing it and putting it out to festivals and stuff, and hopefully I'll have a place you can see it.
Yes.
Because Grandma acts in it.
Amazing.
I know. Really nervous. Like, I'm afraid to listen to this podcast because I don't like the way my voice sounds. So it's going to be just like 90 minutes of me talking a lot.
Well, I can't wait to watch it when it comes out. Amy, what has been your favorite moment of Chicago comedy, like, in your whole career?
Oh, Jesus. That's a tough one. Okay, I'm not sure if this is the absolute favorite because I feel like I'm going to say one and then I'm going to be like, oh wait. But when we were putting on our first all-women's review, our closing night was the final night of the World Series with the Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
And the Annoyance called us and was like, you know, we can let you out of the contract for this show if you just want to cancel because, well, the Annoyance is very close to Wrigley, and they were anticipating a situation, which didn't happen. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do that to my cast members. Like, they're not going to not get to perform their show one final time because of sports. That's ridiculous to me. We're theater kids. How could we possibly let sports be in charge of what we do? So I said, no, we'll put it up. And what actually happened is that was the only sold-out performance of the run in the main stage room at the Annoyance. We sold 100 tickets. It was amazing. The show was great. That show was called There's Something About Bloody Mary. And actually, we did a pretty disgusting period gag where all of the women had period blood explode from their crotches at the end of the show. It was very interesting rigs to figure out how to make and get into their pants and explode and have clean clothes for them to put on. Oh, big thing. Thank you, Adrienne Peterson. She wrote the scene, but also then figured out how to do exploding periods. So that, you know, you do the work, you get the scene. But what happened is, you know, the Cubs obviously won the World Series, and it was the first time in 100 million years. So everybody crowded the streets, and we couldn't leave. Like, there was no way to get home.
Oh, my gosh.
The trains quit running, but, like, the streets were closed off. There were humans everywhere. And so we just got – they started airing the game after our show in the big stage, and you just drank beer, watched the Cubs win the World Series, and sat around covered in old fake period blood. That was a really good time. Also, because that was the first show I directed on my own at Huggable, without Hunter or Mark or anybody helping, because for the all-women show, we really wanted it to be top to bottom Our musical director was a woman, Katie Manning Foster. And then obviously, Jessica Thomas was our stage manager. And I'm sorry, Mark, I was wrong. She is the most capable human being I've ever met in my life. Jessica Thomas can literally do anything. I would use myself as a human shield to protect Jessica Thomas. She's amazing.
Stage managers are a very special and important person, and anyone in the theater industry, whether you're a comedian or an actor, if you don't respect your stage manager, you are not working hard enough. Like, they do so much work.
Yeah, they're amazing, and Jessica's one of the all-time best.
Mm-hmm. Well, Amy, this has been a phenomenal interview. If our listeners want to find Huggable Riot on social media or want to learn more about you all, where would you direct them?
We have our very own website that, I mean, I'm going to be honest, definitely hasn't been updated in like a year, but it's huggableriot.com. You can see all of our past shows. I believe there's stills and artwork up for that, as well as performer page. So anybody who has ever been on the stage at Huggable Riot has their headshot and bio up there. We actually don't take them down unless you specifically ask. So even if you never do another show with us again, we feel like you deserve credit for the work that you did. So we keep them up, which has also been impressive because it's a list of like 70 people at this point. It's so many. And we have our YouTube channel. Mark Fleming tapes our shows. And so there's a lot of video content up there. So probably some entire shows are up there. And my mom subscribes to it. So if you want to see my mom's username on that, you can do that. We're also on Instagram pretty successfully and Twitter less successfully. So Huggable Riot on Twitter and Instagram. Please follow us. It will make my heart happy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I actually used to run the Huggable Instagram for a minute. So if you all also want to support me, you can go also support Huggable Riot, because that was also part of my work back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Claire's a champion too.
Oh, thanks, Amy. Well, Amy, thank you again so much for being on Sit Still, Look Opinionated, and I cannot wait for the next Huggable show, because Huggable is a very special place in my heart, and I know with so many other Chicago comedians and beyond.
Me too. Thank you for having me. This is delightful. I'll talk to you anytime, my baby.
Of course. Amazing.
And that's all for today. If you have any questions or comments about today's episode, you can email us at sitstilllookopinionated@gmail.com. And make sure to follow us on Instagram at sitstill_lookopinionated. And now on Twitter at sitstillpodcast. And make sure to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you didn't hear that right, please write a review. Please, please, please write a review! This podcast was produced by Michael Dritto and Claire Malky, and written by myself, Claire Malky, Michael Dritto, Fee Basanyavichis, and Gabriel Scavor. Theme music by Terrence Jackson. Transition music by Christina Walter. Research by Ross Black. This program is partially supported by a grant from the Illinois Arts Council Agency. If you would like to support this podcast, please visit and subscribe to our Patreon page linked in the show notes. This podcast was recorded on the land of the Kickapoo, Peoria, and Potawatomi Nations. And of course, I'm your host, Claire Malky. Oh, and don't forget, stay opinionated. Bye!
Impossible,
the French responded.
Rwanda is nowhere near
Nope, it's not going to work. I'm not going to do it.